Be the right club. Be the right club today. Yes!
Johnny, that's better than most.
How about him?
That is better than most. Better than most!
Expect anything different?
All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the No Laying Up podcast. We've been wanting to get these two together in the same room, mic'd up at the same time. Mark Leishman and his caddy, Matty Kelly, here at the BMW Championship. What's it like to come back to a tournament? You have three PGA Tour wins. What's it like to come back to a tournament that you won the previous year? What's it like defending?
Yeah, I mean, it's awesome. You know, anytime you can defend anywhere, it's great. This is the first time I'll have defended on a golf course where I didn't win it the year before.
Oh, that's right.
So it's a different course. But I haven't defended any of my other PGA Tour wins. So hopefully that'll change my luck and we can defend this week on a new course.
What's the scouting report on the course this year?
I remember it being really long, but it's not. Didn't seem that long. I guess it's really hot, and I know they've made some changes, but it didn't seem that long. And I didn't. It's a lot drier than I thought it was going to be. So I don't think it's going to play that long. But severe greens, rough's pretty thick, but they're generous fairways. So I think pretty low scoring.
I want to know, like, first, and I know, Matty, you've been on the podcast before. You told some stories back in the day, but I still kind of want to hear how your guys' relationship started and what the first memories you guys have of each other are.
First memories ever?
Or sure, yeah.
Caddying?
No, first memories ever.
First memories ever. I remember we used to be, we live near each other in Warrnambool, and my first memories of Matty is being down the practice fairway at Warrnambool. We used to always go down there, and there was a good little chipping green down there that normally played into the wind. So
where's Warrnambool for people that don't know?
Warrnambool is about 3.5 hours drive southwest of Melbourne.
So southern coast of Australia.
Southern coast of Australia. Very cold water, lots of sharks, lots of wind.
Yep.
Working class town. So both of our dads were, you know, in trade. And, you know, working class family. So we used to go to the golf course. We would practice mostly just seeing who could get the most backspin, usually.
Yeah.
On the green.
To the wind.
Trying to...
we did the same thing as kids. That's all that mattered was... I remember one of my buddies played a precept extra spin, and we all watched it backspin once on a par three. We all had that ball in our bag the very next round.
That was like
a
wet noodle.
All we cared about was being able to backspin it.
Yeah. Like when you got those Nike wedges.
That was good. Yeah, I got a set of wedges, and I remember precept. I think it was a Tour Premium, was it? It was the same as the Nike Tour Accuracy. Yeah. Exactly. Okay. The same golf ball. But we used to get them, and you'd find a big patch of divots and with the sand in them, and you'd be just tearing the shreds out of these golf balls. And
I actually bought a diamond face, like one of those pure spin diamond face wedges.
You guys probably didn't see those infomercials.
It had like sandpaper basically on the face.
It was the illegal wedge, but they had the infomercial on the Golf Channel as a kid, the pure spin diamond face scoring wedge. Every kid wanted one, and they were the worst golf clubs ever made. Like it had like a crusted face, but yeah, you hit it five times and then like it goes away basically.
Yeah,
but they sold a ton of those.
First five times were sweet.
They were awesome. Mate of mine, Leroy, he had the same one. He'd hit like 10 yard chips on the chipping green, on the putting green actually, right next to the clubhouse, and he could get them spinning backwards. they were a lot of fun. I remember those.
So were you guys competing against each other in tournaments as kids, or how did you guys become mates?
I wish we were. I wasn't good enough.
Well, were you lining up in the same tournaments?
Trying to, yeah. And Mark was a couple of years older than me, so he was always...
I still am.
Yeah, he still is a couple of years older than me. He was always... he was steps ahead of me anyway, but... And then with the age gap, he was always... He would be in Melbourne playing city, like pennants and stuff like that, whereas I never, at the same time, never competed.
I guess when Matty started going to play in Melbourne, that was when I started to go and play interstate or around the world. So I was always a year or two ahead of Matty, but Matty was a good player, a really good player. We had some really good matches together. It was always good competition. It's nice when you can be growing up with guys... Who can play.
Mm-hmm.
There was quite a few guys at home that...
Well, was it evident to you that you were like much more talented than a lot of your peers? Did you need to go elsewhere to kind of get the right level of competition when you were a junior, or yeah, when did you kind of realize how talented you were?
When Maddie played well, you know, it was a good match.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, you know, when you can not play your best and win, that's when you kind of realize that you have to go elsewhere.
Same struggles we have. Yeah.
Yeah. Totally. Go elsewhere, and then
everybody nodding along, listening to this. Like, yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah, for sure.
Yeah. So that, I mean, it's the same. Well, not your entire career, but until you get to, you know, the bigger tours. You know, when I was playing national amateur events, you know, when I was 21, again, not having to play that well, and I thought to myself, well, that's the time where I need to take that next step and turn pro. So that's what I did. I didn't want to turn pro too early and struggle. You know, we didn't have a lot of money and had to, I paid all my, you know, most of my own way and everything. So didn't want to come out and run out of money. So I wanted to make sure that when I turned pro that I was good enough and was going to make money straight off, which I did, which I'm glad that I waited that long.
Going back, you won the Warrnambool Club Championship as a 13-year-old.
Yep.
And you played in the same group as your dad.
Yeah, we the club championships at home was four rounds of stroke play. So it was, I remember it being really windy that week, or 2 weeks that it was over.
Even more windy than it typically is.
It was blowing.
It's typically windy down there, yeah.
I remember I shot 77 in the last round, and that was like, you know, saying that you shot 62 at Carnoustie or something. It was like,
really?
You shoot that? Yeah. It was blowing pretty good. And,
how many back was your dad? Like, were you guys tied going around?
No, I'm glad we weren't, because I might not have thought it was legit. But no, he finished third. Okay. We just happened to play together in that last round. And yeah, a guy sort of choked coming down the stretch, and I handed it to me. So it was a good way to win my first one with not really any pressure.
And Maddie, were you playing in that one?
No.
Were you? Okay.
No. I played, I think my first one was, I was like 14 or 15, so Mark would have been 16 or 17.
Okay. So did you know, was it always a goal to come play in the US?
Yeah, it was.
On the main tour?
I mean, you know, when I was 13, you know, you hope that you can just turn pro and do something as a golfer, whether it's a club pro or, you know, I idolised both the club pros that were at Warrnambool. One of them's still there. So even that I thought would have been really cool to be able to do that. But probably once I was about 16, that became a goal to try and, you know, get onto a major tour around the world somewhere. Obviously, your dream is to get onto this tour. I was lucky enough to play good at the right times and make it out here. And then, you know, I've been successful since I've been out here. So it's, yeah, I mean, you know, you do have to pinch yourself occasionally. We get looked after very well. But I'm just, you know, I'm really glad that I had to do the hard yards and work and get, you know, I played on the smaller tours. I played on the Korean tour and the web.com tour and all those smaller ones. So it makes you appreciate how good this tour is.
Yeah, you earned your stripes, yeah.
Yeah, we really don't have much to complain about out here. We're pretty lucky.
Yeah, one of the guys that we know that we won't name, but he was going from the PGA Tour last year down to Web Finals, and they didn't have a courtesy car at the first Web Finals event. He's like, oh, man, dude, I got to get back on the PGA Tour. Like, no way. Yeah. So they treat you a little nicer when you are the defending champ? Do you get, like, an upgrade in vehicle?
Oh, yeah. Caddy does.
You got an upgrade in vehicle?
They gave me
a car. You got a vehicle, period.
Yeah, I got a vehicle this week.
Do all the caddies get vehicles here?
I think they do it for the last 5 years. Like, defending champion, previous 5 years, get cars.
You got four more years of,
yeah.
You just got to keep making it back.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, so it's a pretty good deal. I get the same treatment. Okay. Probably the only different treatment I get is I'll probably get extra tickets if I need them.
Which a little bit better parking spot too. That's all they line up on the champions.
Yeah, got a parking spot up front. Maddie gets a parking spot this
week
too.
Look at that. What other events do caddies get vehicles at?
I'm not sure any. I remember the Byron Nelson used to give one to the winning caddy, a Cadillac.
Like to own?
To own, yeah.
Oh, sweet.
Yeah. So, but that lasted a couple of years and it's no longer. But I don't think, not that I know of, I think this is the only one.
I was wondering why Maddie was reading putts the back nine of last year at this tournament. This is why they give him a car this week.
A free rental car. For a
Matt, are you parking next to Patrick Reed this week?
No, next to Ricky, actually. Ricky Fowler. Shout out Big Randy.
So, yeah, you guys ran away with the title last year at Conway. I don't even, far from it being over, he had, I think, a couple putts left. The flag was, the screw was off and the flag was removed from the flag stick before even the final putt dropped.
Was it that early though?
It was pretty saucy.
There were some early preparations.
It was impressive, but it looked very routine.
Well, I'd like it to be routine. I don't know. I didn't notice. I didn't do it deliberately, that's for sure. Mark rolled a nice one in the last too, so I guess, yeah, I didn't do it deliberately. That's
a good tradition of ours too, whenever you win a big match. Like, you take the screw off and try to act like you're taking the flag.
I legitimately thought you hold that shot on 17. The tee shot.
Yeah, that was looking good, actually. Yeah, that would have been nice. Get the trophy and a car. It would have been very nice. But
does having been through that ringer a couple times and won a couple times, does it make it any easier coming down the stretch when you're in contention of a tournament now?
I guess it does. I mean, to be honest, that last round of the BMW last year was probably one of the hardest rounds I've ever played. I was leading going in the back nine in Boston the week before, and didn't finish off the way I wanted to. Ended up, I'm not sure what I shot in the back nine, it was even or a couple over, or can't remember, but Justin Thomas ended up running over the top of me, and that was pretty disappointing. And then probably one of the only sleepless nights I've ever had before a golf tournament was that Saturday night before the BMW last year. I had a 5-shot lead, having, you know, blown a lead the week before. That was a bit of extra pressure, and one of the most satisfying days of golf I've had, for a lot of reasons. One, because I, you know, got through what I needed to do and won the tournament. But, you know, we had my family was there. Was Steph and Vivi there?
No, they're at Bay Hill.
They're at Bay Hill. Yeah, but you know, to have your family there and be able to enjoy that was really cool. So
to win twice in a year too. I mean, that's massive.
It's just fun to hear you say that, because watching it was kind of like, oh yeah. I mean, like he's got that wrapped up. Like, this looks pretty easy.
So funny, because four or five shots seems like a lot, but when you.
Well, that
I bet guaranteed to him it didn't feel like a lot. It certainly didn't feel like a lot to me.
Well, I'm sure it would have been even harder if you'd have known that, like, Tron and I had a bet on the final round of the Dell Technologies, and like, I had JT and he had you, and the loser had to wear Skechers to the BMW. So Tron had to wear Skechers last year for 2 days here at this event.
Yeah, right.
So that would have been too much pressure for you had you known that.
Yeah, no, it's funny. Like, the hardest rounds are sometimes the most satisfying.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was just so much more determined, just having gone through what I went through the week before. It was very disappointing, and yes, everything happens for a reason.
Yeah, and you stayed hot. You rolled right into the new season, but you and JT were in the CJ Cup, the playoff there. I want you to take us through that second shot into 18, what the talking was between you and Maddie, what you ultimately decided, and how that played out.
Yeah, so it's a pretty good spot to talk about it, actually. No laying up. I hit a good tee shot down the last. I think I can't remember if I was tired or one back. But when you hit it down there, if you hit it a little bit too far, there's some trees in the before the next fairway.
It's a funky little hole.
Yeah, so there's water short, left, right, everywhere. It's an elevated shot, and I think I had 260 yards.
Yeah, straight the yardage. It was kind of just cold and into the wind, which made the yardage, like, it was only probably about 260, 265, but which is normally no problem with a 3-wood. But it was cold and into the wind, which made it a lot.
And the wind was
playing like 2.
And you're elevated too.
The wind was humming.
Yeah. It was a strong wind.
And Sully, you were texting us and tweeting about it. And
he was like the only live reporter.
The feed went out.
The live feed went out from the Golf Channel. So I was like legitimately the only one updating people on what was going on in Korea. Like 30 people stayed up to watch it at 2 in the morning, and everyone was so mad that the feed went out.
Yeah, so it was, I had to hit a little cut around the trees, and the ball was a little bit above my feet. Which is an uncomfortable shot to start with, and having to get that much out of the 3-wood in those conditions, it was touch and go. It was probably, it was very touch and
go.
What
did you want to hit?
Well, I was thinking about hitting driver, but then I thought, I can't really do that, because, I mean...
My heart's fluttering.
It's like, I mean, I'll look like an absolute idiot if I hit a bad shot with a driver. So I said to Maddie, like, what about we lay up over here? I said, there's no chance I'm laying up.
Yeah, yes. No chance we're laying up. If we have to hit driver, we'll hit it.
Yeah.
But...
And then the wind kind of went from maybe 25 miles an hour to 20. And I'm like, all right, I'm hitting it now. And I just nailed it. Came right out of the middle. To 10 feet, I guess.
Yeah,
12
and
feet.
The most impressive part was you guys nailed the high five. Like, you just nailed it. Like, caddies and players always mess up the high five. You guys just turn and just perfect high five.
It was probably the best shot I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Under, you know. Not necessarily a major or anything like that, but golf shots was probably the best I've ever seen.
And that was the shot that kind of is always reminds me of how great it is to go watch golf in person. Like on TV, you just can't get appreciation for how much wind was actually into you and the physical elements of that shot and to hit it,
And normally, because he did skirt that tree, I mean, it must have missed that tree by less than a yard. And we were talking about a decent cut around the tree. So to get that much out of a three would hit a lot straighter and just a tiny falling right.
You got that shot, Tron, 260 into the wind with the three wood?
No, I have it with a driver. These guys have... Well, I stopped teeing the ball up.
Oh, my God.
So I hit driver off the deck on the tee now.
Remember, no...
Good. I mean, the people on the left are safe.
Well, and I swear, like, it doesn't spin as much, and it stays straighter. And
I swear I almost hit my driver straighter off the ground than I do off a tee.
Well, do you remember the story from the third hole from an earlier round during the CJ Cup as well?
Driver did I hit, probably.
Well, what was the story exactly?
Well,
I don't remember.
It was the ninth. Well, I thought it was the ninth.
Well, that happened on the ninth, too. Nine, but the third, you had driver off the deck. Or, like, there was some kind of conversation on it. And you Maddie wanted...
the towel at Maddie.
Yeah, Maddie wanted you to lay up, and you waved the no-laying-up towel at him and hit driver off the deck onto the green.
I think he did it three or four times that week.
So every time I hit driver off the deck now, I just wave the towel. Yeah, because you were there. I was going to hold it up to you, but you weren't watching.
He was probably too taken by JT.
This was earlier. They weren't paired yet.
I mean, it's fun. I mean,
a no cut event. You're going for
that. And I mean, I had a good year the year before, but I always go back to it. Like, I always play my best golf when I'm just having fun, not thinking about the situation. Do what I would do. You know, obviously there's certain situations where you've got to play a little bit smarter. But it's fun to hit driver off the deck. And like I was saying, I mean, I know I'm not going to miss it left, so it's only I can aim a left edge of the green, and it's either going to be on the green or right of that.
Folks, summer might be coming to an end soon, although it doesn't feel like it here in Philly. But thanks to Travis Matthew, they are keeping the summer vibes going with their Endless Vacation collection that just launched a few days ago on September 1st. Newest arrivals feature button-ups, pants, and jackets, perfect for your plans this fall, plus all the polos, shorts, and hats that you love to wear on the golf course. Visit travismatthew.com to learn more about the Endless Vacation collection.
Well, these last couple of years have been kind of a breakout for you. And we heard Maddie, who was on the podcast earlier this year, kind of give his estimation and reason for why that is. But what would you say has been the biggest difference in your game the last couple of years?
Biggest difference, I mean, driving, I think. Going to the Callaway Drive has been unbelievable. It's, after Bay Hill last year, I said, it changed my game, which I really think it did. It's a lot easier game when you can be on the fairway and a little bit further up the fairway, hopefully. So that's been a huge difference. But I think also with everyone knows about it, but with what happened with Audrey, I don't care as much now about golf. It's what I do for a living. I love what I do, but it's not life and death.
Just gave you some perspective.
Yeah, it's a lot easier to hit that hook shot on 15 at the Masters around the tree, and if it comes off, awesome, which it did.
God, that shot.
If it doesn't come off, it's like, well, they're not going to, it's not, someone's not going to put a gun to your head, and hopefully, and maybe Maddie might. I don't know, but it's fun, and I think having that perspective from what we went through with Audrey, that makes the game easier as well, because just knowing that, yes, I want to play great, but if we don't, we've still got our kids to go home to and wives, and we've both got great lives off the course, which I think makes the game on the course easier.
I can't imagine how many times you've relayed the story, but for those that aren't familiar with what happened with your wife in 2015, I don't know if there is a shortened version of what happened or what you guys went through, but what are you referring to what happened with your wife?
Yeah, so she got toxic shock syndrome, sepsis, and acute respiratory distress syndrome. I was down at Augusta practicing for the Masters, and got a phone call to basically come home because your wife's got sepsis.
Did you know what that was?
I didn't. I had to Google it, and then I was sort of a little worried. You Google things, and it's not a great idea to Google it, but that's sort of how I found out. Realized that it was pretty bad. There was a good chance that she wouldn't make it, and then I was home for a couple of days. She got put, she was in the ICU when I got home. About a day later, we got told that she was more than likely going to die. And then we got very lucky with the doctors we had. They kind of did a Hail Mary, flipped her onto her stomach to drain the fluid out of her lungs. And with sepsis, it's a blood poisoning. So once your blood turns toxic, it goes through all your organs and basically shuts them all down. So her lungs were the most affected, along with her heart. I mean, her heart rate was 90 over 30 for a few days. But anyway, we got told she was going to die. They did a Hail Mary, and it worked. And then, you know, the recovery was tough for the first sort of couple of years, but she's back to good now. So now we've got a foundation, the Begin Again Foundation, which we're just trying to, we help families that have survived sepsis and the local children's hospital as well. But a lot of it is awareness, because sepsis is very treatable if you get it early. For every hour it goes untreated, your chance of dying goes up 8%. Oh. So if you leave it 12 hours, you know, you're done. So that's what we're trying to do, get awareness out there. And, you know, we feel like we're making a difference, which is nice.
And when you say that it was, the doctors were saying it was not likely she was going to live, is it true that they gave her a 5% chance of surviving?
It was less than 5, but yeah. So when you have ARDS, so pneumonia is a spot of fluid on your lungs. ARDS is when your lungs are completely full of fluid. That alone is a 40% chance of dying, and then every other organ that's involved on top of that adds 30, and she had like four or five, I think it was four other organs, which is 120% there, plus your 40, which means she's done. But yeah, somehow, I think the reason she lived is she didn't get a chance to say goodbye to the kids when we had to put her into the coma, or we, the doctors. You know, she's kicking and screaming and wanting to say, you know, call the kids, and they said, like, no, we've got to do it right now. So she didn't get a chance to do that. I think if she had got to make that phone call, she wouldn't be here now. So
how long was she in a coma?
She was only in the coma for about 5 days. And then when they flipped her onto her stomach, she was the first or second case worldwide that they did that without paralyzing her. So they had to sedate her really heavily. So they it took her 2 days to wake up from the coma. They took her off the sedation, and she was still out for two more days. So yeah, she's very lucky, very lucky. And you know, like I say, it's good has come of it, which is important. You know, when you're in a position to make a difference, I feel like it's important to do that, and I feel like we're doing it.
Can't know how to transition back to golf after that, man. But that's later that year, if I have the timeline right, that was when you were at the Open Championship in 2015, right at the at St. Andrews, that you were in the playoff for.
Yeah.
So was that kind of adding the perspective, or what you just mentioned about how maybe you don't care as much about golf?
Exactly.
Was that kind of an immediate reaction to that, you think, playing so well?
Yeah. I mean, looking back on that tournament now, I wish I had cared a bit more that week. Because I mean, I'm leading the leading the Open with five holes to go, and
on the old course
and I wasn't really feeling anything. It was not, I mean, I wasn't nervous, I wasn't, it was no, you know, I was happy when I hit a good shot and a bit pissed when I didn't, but I wasn't too worried about it. And looking back on it, I wish I, you know, had have cared a little more and felt those feelings a bit more, would have learned a lot more from it, I feel like. But
Maddie, did you pick up on any of that? Like, were you,
were you feeling the feelings?
Oh, I was nervous. But I also found out my wife was pregnant that weekend, so I didn't know. It was a weird weekend, because it honestly did just feel like another tournament, and he was just doing what he was supposed to do. That's kind of what we'd gotten used to with Mark. Like, he just does that kind of stuff. Shoots 130 on the weekend at a major.
And going back, did you talking about how you just like being carefree on the golf course and having fun, do you feel like it's your responsibility to keep him that way, or do you feel like it's your responsibility to kind of bring him back to reality and say, hey, we got to grind a little
he's
bit?
He's very good at balancing the both of them. Definitely, it's my job to give him a kick up the ass if he needs it, but that's very rare. And I mean, we're going through a little bit at the moment where he's getting too down on himself, so it's like my job, and then so that's my job to like keep talking, bringing back the fun. So we're trying to bring back the fun a little bit, which that's really, actually, we've played with Tiger a lot, which whenever you play with Tiger, it focuses you in so much that you kind of forget about what you've done 2 weeks ago or whatever, and you just concentrate on the now, which I think this late in the season, being this tired, has really helped both of us, because we're both kind of spent, but obviously he needs to be a lot sharper than me.
But what do you say to him when you need to give him a boost?
Or he doesn't have to say much.
No.
Yeah. He just gives you that look. You know, it's just a couple
of
words.
It's just not much at all.
I don't know what the language is on this show.
It's explicit rated, so you can say whatever you want.
So he'll just call me a couple of words and I get the message. But it's nothing. I mean, you know, we're such good friends that we could say anything to each other. And if either of us gets offended by it, we know that we don't. Like, if Matty says something to me and I get offended by it, which I wouldn't, but I know that he doesn't mean it that way, if that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah. It's kind of with an end goal in mind.
Yeah, exactly.
It's not meant
like, he said that, but I know he meant it this way. And it's good.
Yeah.
And we're good as well because, I mean, certain weeks we do spend a decent amount of time together off the course, but at the first few years on tour, we were pretty good at balancing that. If we were spending too much time together, it would go over onto the course and things would change on the course, but we just knew, we've got to back off a little bit.
Well, so going back, and this is Maddie's told it to me a few times and it's like my favorite story, but you had been over with Mark for what, a season and a half when you came over to caddy for him on the web?
Oh, and yeah, and I
or
told
nationwide
him
at the time.
Yeah, yeah. We're in Rochester and I'd just run out of money. So I guess that's where you're going, right?
Yeah.
So, and Mark was paying me he was paying me like a full-time caddy that's been out here 10 years, and I was just caddying I didn't know what I was doing. I was learning, but I didn't know what I was doing. And and then we had 2 weeks off, and I said, before the 2 weeks off, I'm like, hey, I've kind of maxed out 2 credit cards here. It's time for me to go home and work again. And comes out next week and wins by 11.
I finished the week after that. And then we won.
And then he won by 11.
At Midland.
Within 3 weeks,
and then you were rookie of the year the next year.
And then
year.
We got our card. And I remember our first tournament on the tour was at Sony.
Oh,
and I remember we finished, I think it was 12th. And we were both, as you should be, but we were both so excited. And we went down the beach and just...
We were drunk. Well, he made like $100,000. We were so rich, both of us.
It was 90 something thousand dollars. So it was a lot of money.
Paid off one of those credit cards, right?
And it was the funniest thing because Maddie's like, have you ever seen anyone do this? And he told me what it was. And I'm like, nah. He goes, I'm going to do it. So he goes into a 7-Eleven or a
ABC
store, goes in and buys half a gallon of milk, downs the whole thing.
and then
shoves his fingers down his throat and power spews. It would have hit that wall. It goes 5 yards. And we're just,
this is on like Waikiki Beach.
Yeah, it was dark. It was dark, but I'm on the ground just like I've completely lost it. I'm just crying, laughing. And he's still spewing over in the corner. I remember the check and I remember that about that week. Yeah, just like one of those things. It was so excited. Yeah, so that was our first week on tour.
It was all downhill from
one
there.
One thing I'll never, ever forget.
So at that time, was that a lot of money to you at that time?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it still is.
Yeah.
Growing up the way we did, it's, you really appreciate the value of a dollar. And that's one thing that I really want to ingrain into my kids. It's going to be hard to do, but that's what I want to do. My son Harvey, he's all about money, and he wants to know how much money I made and this and that. And last year after the BMW, he's like, Daddy, how much money did you make today? I'm like, $100. I got $100. So he thinks every time I win a golf tournament, I win $100.
There you go.
So that's, I was telling, who was I telling that the other day? Brian Harmon. And he's like, man, I think I'm going to start doing that to my kids. But it's good that, if they knew how much money we made, they'd go to school and they just think that, I mean, it's just not how I want to bring up my kids.
That is an impressive, I think like I was like a 45 second transition from Maddie spewing milk at a projectile rate to teaching lessons to your kids about money. That's kind of a...
That's pretty much my role on tour, is to just power speed.
Yeah. But that was just we're talking about money, and you asked me, was that $90,000 a lot of money? And yes, it was, and it still is.
Yeah.
Was there a moment along the way when you're like, man, like, next year, like, I got to get a real caddy. Like,
no, never.
Maddie,
yeah, at the start, yeah, he didn't, you know, really know the proper caddy way, but I guess he knew how to... He knew how to caddy for me.
And he took ownership of it.
And I feel like he's, you know, grown into, you know, if not the best caddy.
Yeah.
Out there. And
I've talked to like Joe and Sam about it, like behind your back, and I'm like, tell me the deal on Matt. And they're like, dude, he's like, legitimately. He's gone from 0 to 60
Exactly what I need, and it's great because he's earned the respect of everyone. He stuck by me when I've been playing bad. And you know, it's nice to have your best mate out there with you to enjoy the success and go through the low, you know, the low times. And I've never really had another caddy come up to me and ask me, you know, to caddy for me, because they know that we're solid.
It's like the ultimate respect.
Exactly. Right? Yeah, and that's a big compliment to Matty, I feel like. Yeah.
For a player of your caliber, what makes a caddy a great caddy for you, or what makes Matty a great caddy?
Well, obviously the numbers and all that. That's very important. It's knowing when to talk and when to shut up. But I think more importantly, it's the stuff between shots for me. There's a lot of downtime in golf, and if you're thinking about your next shot, you know, 5 minutes before you hit it, you're going to be so tired at the end of the week. Yeah. I've had weeks where I've done that, and I've been, you're worn out by Friday afternoon. So just talking about stuff that's outside the ropes, whether it's just on the other side of the ropes or whether it's, you know, way outside the ropes, you know, at home or whatever. So I'm sure you know what I'm talking about. But I think that's more important. He knows how far I hit my clubs, and he knows what shots I like to hit. So that's... You don't want someone who's telling you what shot they would hit. You want them to be telling you what shot they think that you want to hit.
It's kind of just sense. a matching kind of a synergy of some sorts. And exactly. I feel like it, obviously not nearly even remotely at the same level. But like when I have a caddy that we're just like seeing putts differently.
Yep.
You end up kind of trying to see the line in between it, and you don't commit to something like that. I feel like it's really hard to match up vision wise. And
it's funny when I just finished walking the course, and I don't see the shots that I would hit out there anymore.
Yeah.
So every time Mark likes to hit a little, it's pretty straight now, but like tiny falling right fade. So every time I get up there and I just picture this little fade, it's nowhere near the shot I hit. But it's...
So Mark, I went out with him, I don't know, 6 months ago, 8 months ago, and played, and I was blown away. He hits the shit out of the ball.
Yeah,
he never plays. Like I can't drag him out to the golf course.
It's too hot in Jacksonville.
he bombs it. I mean,
well, there's got to be something to just being always around golf, Maddie, that you don't want to play necessarily in your free time.
It started the idea of playing golf because in the last 3 years, I've probably played three times, maybe two or three times. But the idea of playing more, it's coming around. And we had a baby, she's 2.5 now, so that when we're on the road for 27 to 30 weeks a year, I want to try and be dad when I'm home. So it kind of gets to the point where you kind of feel guilty taking 4 hours of your day away from her. And then, you know, you try and give your wife a break as well. It's the other aspect of it. So
we got to get Vivi and Freddie out there together.
Yeah.
Well, how much has being a dad kind of changed the way you view life on the road?
Oh, it's totally different. Like, Mark had kids four years before me, and he'd always be like, oh, I don't want to spend, you know, 3 weeks on the road is a long time now. It's like, come on, dude, like, suck it up. And now I can't go 3 weeks without the girls coming out. Either they'll come out or go home for the Sunday night, Monday, fly out Tuesday morning deal. It's changed a lot. There's no going out drinking with the boys. I mean, there's beers and having fun, but it's totally different.
Yeah.
There's no point to it
anymore. A lot of day drinking.
Yeah, he still goes hard. It's just in the presence of the family. Mark, last year when you, after you won, there's like the best little video of your son. He's like, "Wait for me, Mark Leishman."
Oh, really?
Yeah. We say that, we do that all the time.
Yeah.
What's it like? So you live in Virginia Beach, is that right? What's your reasoning for living in Virginia Beach, and what's your home game like there? Do you play a lot when you're home, and what's life like there?
My reason for living there is my wife. She's from there. So you know, we got to be away from our families back home in Australia, our mum and dad and siblings.
How'd you meet your wife?
In a bar, actually, in Williamsburg, Virginia.
What were you doing there?
I was there for a Monday qualifier on the web, well, the Nationwide Tour at the time. So I think it was before the qualifier. I think it was like the Saturday night before. So we had some time to kill. So we thought we'd better go out. It's a terrible bar. But, so went, you know, looked for a decent looking girl and went up to her and it's like, is this the best place to go? She's like, well, yeah, it is. Oh, geez, all right, no worries. so we had a drink and she ended up buying me shots, which she still gives me shit about to this day. She's like, you let me buy you shots?
Yeah, I'm playing Monday qualifiers on the web tour. Yeah, so, you're buying me shots.
Yeah, so we and then we, you know, dated. Oh, she went back, had to go back to Virginia Beach that night. She came back up a few days later for we went on our first date and sort of hit it off after that. So it's a good spot. I don't play really any golf on my weeks off. I'll do a bit of chipping in the backyard.
I was gonna ask you about your putting green.
Yeah
what's it like?
Hit about 70 yard shots there. It's like the green's probably like a fringe on tour, so it's, you know, just that shorter than a fairway, but not as good as the green.
Bermuda?
Reacts like a green. Yeah, it's Bermuda.
Okay.
So I can get it pretty firm or soft or, you know, however I want it. It's just fun. I can stripe it up with me. I've got a Toro greens mower that I cut it with and get the stripes on it. And it's a good workout. Build the sweat up. Good. Doesn't make me feel guilty for having a beer after it. So.
What's the fastest you've gotten it? Like, do you have a stint meter?
Speed wise, no, it wouldn't be quick at all.
You've got the indoor one as well.
I've got a putting green upstairs in the room over our garage. It's half gym, half putting green. I stay in the putting green end of it. the green outside, not quick at all. It might have got to eight, when it was.
So, what do you do with really your free time at home then?
Free time.
Or your time. I don't know if it's free time at all.
Yeah, a lot
when you
of time,
kids.
Yeah. You know, with. With the kids, yeah, it's we got with the foundation now. We've got a lot of obligations with that. I like supporting other charities, so I do a lot of charity days. Mostly just spending time with the kids. They've just got into Topgolf, so we take them to Topgolf every now and again. The boys, and they'll go and whack some balls. I generally don't hit too many there, but there's other activities to do at Topgolf. And then, you know, little daughter as well. So during the day, she keeps me busy. I normally try and give Audrey a break when I'm home, and she can go do what she needs to do, and I'll look after Eva. And I just love it. It's great being a dad.
So we've heard about what the celebration's like when you make 90K when you're a rookie on tour. What's it like now when you win a tournament? Do you guys go out? Is it a big party after a win? What's it like? You had two last year. How'd that go?
Yeah, last year I had a party at my place after the BMW. After
Bay Hill, I drove home to Jacksonville. I got home at midnight. Had a beer and
blasting music, all pumped up, or like what's it? No,
it was very like. And then after Chicago, after BMW last year,
I remember you texting me. You were like, "Yo, come downtown."
Yeah,
we
went downtown and we got to a bar. I was with Joe, Ricky's caddy, and we had two or three beers with dinner. And it's just, you're so flat.
Yeah,
it's just like you're so worn out. And also end of the season, so it's a bit of that. But again, a couple more beers, nothing. There's no nightclubs or anything like that involved. I wish we had great stories for you, but there's really nothing.
Yeah, I went out for dinner after Bay Hill with my agent, and then I wish I could show this to everyone listening. But
is there a photo here?
We filled it up. There's quite a few photos, but
we can always include those in the show. Oh, the trophy!
It fit seven cans of beer in it. the BMW trophy. So that was a very good night. My first win at the Travelers, I didn't really feel like I celebrated enough. I guess I thought I was going to have more wins sooner. Plus, I played the following week. It was just, you know, I wish I had celebrated that more. So after these ones, I made sure I celebrated them properly, and yeah, we did that. It's, you know, made some good memories at the golf course, and then with the parties as well. So it's, you know, good to work hard, good to enjoy your success, and then party hard as well.
Well, along those lines, I'm kind of curious to get your feedback on. I feel like, you know, we care a lot about who wins tournaments, but the end of a broadcast is always focused on who wins. How different does like a T5 finish feel from like a T15 finish?
Well, I mean, it depends how it happens, really. Sometimes, I mean, I walked away from the golf course, the Byron Nelson this year. I was outright second and was not, I won't say flat, but I felt like I let that slip away a little bit. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, you can shoot 64 on Sunday and finish fourth and or 10th and be pumped with that.
Yeah.
So it's all dependent.
It depends on the last
day. Depends on
mostly.
The last day, I guess. Yeah. But I mean, I always say to my wife, like, if I do have a bad day, give me 10 minutes and I'll be fine. I guess there's a lot of guys that aren't like that, but I try and separate the golf and the off the course stuff. But yeah, I mean, a top five is a good week. You know, that when you get that text message off the tour that tells you how much money you've made, where you are on the FedEx Cup, that softens the blow a bit if you've had a bad day.
Yeah, totally. When we get those texts every Monday, it's like,
what,
yes.
You play with Tiger 12 times this year.
12 times.
What do you talk to Tiger about? Like, what does Tiger like to talk about?
Did he ask about the no laying up towel? He did, right?
Yeah, he did.
Yeah? The towel? Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, all sorts of stuff. Yeah, I mean,
we legit ran out of stuff to talk.
It's just like, you know, it's like you do with any friends. You kind of forget half the stuff you talk about because it's just...
Everyone says he perks up when you ask about his kids or to talk about his kids. He loves that
part.
Yeah,
he loves talking about the kids. Yeah. I can't even... Can't think.
Yeah,
you're protecting just, the code very well right now.
It was just... There's nothing... There was no story. Like, there's no...
It's nothing out of the ordinary.
No, nothing out of the ordinary at all.
Same thing you would talk to your mates about. Like,
does he have a nickname for you? Marky? Are you Marky?
Leash or Leashy?
Leashy.
Yeah.
You got to get him into Aussie rules football.
He's into rugby. I think because Stevie was so into rugby that he probably watched a fair bit of it. But
Mark, what's your biggest disappointment in the game?
Biggest disappointment? It's probably one of my biggest moments, but... Biggest disappointment is probably not winning the British Open in 15. You know, I had pretty good opportunity there. Even after the first two rounds that I was nowhere to be seen. And then really good weekend. But I had opportunities. You know, I had a pretty good opportunity on 18 with a wedge in my hand that I hit a not the greatest wedge shot in the world. Hit a putt on 17 that looked like it was going in and didn't. And missed a short one on, I think it was 16. So three opportunities in the last three holes of a major. That's disappointing. I wouldn't say it's a disappointment. I'd just say it was more disappointing than anything.
And conversely, what's the thing, other than a major, what's the thing, like whether it be winning an Aussie Open or FedEx Cup or whatever, like what's the thing that you kind of hold above others?
Well, you hit nail on the head, a major. It would be great to be a part of winning President's Cup team in that team environment. I feel like that would be really, really cool.
I don't know if we want to get Maddie started on the...
No.
The setup and all that
Yeah.
stuff.
I mean, one of the bigger events in Australia as well. I mean, there's a lot of things that I want to do. FedEx Cup's a massive one too. You know, it's... They're changing the format next year, which is going to open it up a lot to anyone or pretty much be able to win it. I would probably have to say President's Cup. I think I've been in three losing President's Cups and it's not that much fun. I feel like a winning one to have 11 other guys and, well, not 11 other guys, 30 other guys.
Yeah.
That would be... quite the night.
Well, you got the year to do it.
I was gonna say, exactly. We're so. As an American fan, we're ready for your internationals to win one too. Like, that'd be fine. Go ahead. How pumped are you?
I mean, how often did you play Royal Melbourne?
I used to caddy around there a lot. I've probably caddied around there more than I've played there. But I've probably played there, I don't know, 15 or 20 times. Great golf course. I really hope they get it firm for the tournament.
I was going to say, is there any... It seems like there's... I've talked to Maddie at length about this in the past. Like, it seems like the tour kind of sets it up how they want, where... You know, will Ernie have a little bit more leeway to say, hey, this is how we're going to set it up?
I think he should. I mean, I know that happened at Liberty National, that, you know, the captain there could pretty much set it up how he wanted to. But I think they need to, get it really firm and really fast. Play it like it should be played. Kingston Heath last year, or 2 years ago at the World Cup, didn't play like it should be played. It was very, very soft, and for anyone who had played there before, it was a massive disadvantage. Yeah. So I think it just, as long as it just plays like Royal Melbourne, doesn't play like a, you know, a course that's over here.
Those fescue run-up areas are so good.
Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, you can putt from, it's like the fringes are, I mean, most, all golf courses would love to have them as their greens.
What's it like kind of playing sandbelt courses in Australia and kind of seeing that in your childhood, coming over and playing the style of golf that's played in the United States?
It's very different. I would say the biggest difference is not the firmness of the greens or the speed of the greens. I would say the biggest difference is that they prune the trees in America, and they don't do that in Australia. So if you hit it in the trees in America, you can generally get in and at worst chip it out. In Australia, you get
the tea trees.
Yeah, if you hit it in the trees in Australia, if you don't get bitten by a snake, you'll lose your ball. You know, like it's brutal. And if you do find it, you're probably better off not finding it.
Yeah.
So you've got to be a lot more cautious off the tee. It's just a completely different style. So one that, you know, I grew up playing. So I'm probably, I was a little more conservative at the start of my career, and you know, you have to adapt. So that's one thing that, you know, you guys love to do when you come over for the President's Cup is hopefully need to adapt a little bit.
Oh, it's the best. I remember I listened to Jeff Ogilvie on the Fried Egg podcast just say, after, you know, playing in Australia and then coming over and seeing U.S. courses, he's like, well, that's not right. Like, the strategy is all wrong and all that. Do you get into anything with, like, the strategical elements of the game, or you just kind of...
No, not at all.
Hit it and find it?
Yeah, I think you can get too into that there for a little bit. My coach is right into that, Dennis. He's helped me a lot with certain golf courses. You know, saying, you know, this is how this hole's designed to be played. You might hit it over there, and then you can hit it there, and it gives you a good angle. But when it's soft, everything's thrown out the window. Mm-hmm. If you can fly a bunker, you should try and fly that bunker.
Yeah.
Because if the greens are soft, you can hit it anywhere, and it doesn't really matter, unless the rough's like 8 inches.
Strategy unless goes out the window unless it's fast and firm any golf course, really. So, yes. Maddie, what's the most important lesson you've learned in caddying so far?
Probably it's just learning when and when to and when to not say anything. That's just knowing your guy, basically. Because you can say all the right things, but if the guy's not open to hearing it at the right when you say it at the wrong time, that's pointless.
Yeah.
That's the hardest thing, and it's the talking to someone who's fired up is very, very hard to tell them to calm down. Because if someone does it to me personally, I go the other way. I get more angry. So you've got to know. And I'm very hot when I play golf, so that's another issue. But that's the hardest and most challenging part of the job for sure. It hasn't really been a learning lesson, I don't think. Maybe there has and he hasn't told me, but it's still to this day still working on it, basically.
I feel like I'm pretty mature on the course, but I'm sure occasionally it would feel like Maddie's almost like a bit of a babysitter. When things aren't going right for a couple of whole patches, it's almost like, all right, we've got to get this bloke back into line. How am I going to do it? It's like if a kid's going off, it's like, how am I going to...
Well, at the first hole last week, first hole of the tournament, it was 50-50. It was into the wind, so Mark had hit, and we tried to hit this hard 8-iron, which caused it to spin, and it got up in the air, and it was never going anywhere else but the hazard, and we make 6. So walking to the next tee, I said to myself, the most important 30 minutes of this golf tournament is the next 30 minutes. So we've just got to hit the next 3 or 4 greens in a row. And if we can do that, he'll calm down by then, and ended up hitting the next one to a foot, and it was a tap-in, so that helped, but didn't have to say anything. Hit a great shot the next shot, but that's when you start preparing yourself. All right, if we miss this green, that's when you've got to say something.
Yeah.
It's the sort of stuff, that's what I think about going. Thankfully, it was a long walk, too. It's like an 80-yard walk to next tee. So that's the sort of stuff.
What's the meanest thing you've ever said to Maddie during a round? You could say whatever words you want to on this podcast, too.
I think I'm normally pretty good.
Maybe this is a question for Maddie.
I call myself all sorts of names.
He's more mad at himself.
Yeah,
because opus deus.
Because I've always one thing I've always said to Maddie is that I have him caddying for me because you know it's a partnership, but I want his opinion. I don't want him to tell me what to do. I just want him to give me his opinion, and then at the end of the day, if I still do what I want to do, and unless he stands in front
of the
ball,
you make the decision.
Which
you hit the shot.
He has done a couple of times, but it's like I say. At the end of the day, I think it's my decision, and so I more get angry at myself because I feel like it's my mental error. If I hit a shot I don't want to hit, whatever.
Awesome. Well, glad we finally got to do this. We'll let you guys get out of here. Appreciate you taking the time and all the stories, and especially the one of you spewing milk all over the beach in Hawaii. It's one of the best ones I think we've ever heard.
What was that called?
What's that?
What was that called? Just the...
The move?
No, it was just... Fingers. No, we didn't have a name for it.
Now it's the Maddie Kelly.
Yeah. it's the Maddie Kelly.
So, awesome. All right, guys. Thanks so much for coming on. This was a blast.
No worries at all.
Appreciate it.
Be the right club today. Yes!
Johnny, that's better than most.
How about him?
That is better than most. Better than most! Expect anything.